Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a mentor, coach, and an author. She teaches others how to grab a piece of the Amazon pie. But what you're going to hear in this show is not just Amazon, but how to build an online business in all aspects. Amazon is just a piece of it. So grabbing a piece of the Amazon pie is just the natural outcome of what she teaches people to do. And she's the founder and CEO of the e-commerce business school. When she's not working, she's passionate about fitness, hiking, biking, and anything outdoors. So everybody, with that, meet my guest, Ann Sieg. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's great to have you here, because this is something we're doing for the first time. So we usually focus on Amazon, all the clicks and the PPCs and the keywords. And at the end of the day, all that is really putting a business together and generating revenues, building a team, and everything else. But it's a business that runs online. And for anybody who really gets to a point where they've achieved a little bit of success, and that's like getting steady stream of orders, not necessarily hundreds and hundreds of them, but a little bit of orders, they really ought to start thinking about diversifying their revenue to outside Amazon. Because in case something happens with Amazon, they want to have their own channel. They have to build their own following and everything else. So that makes them an online business. So you are going to share with us some of the things that you teach. Anybody who attends e-commerce business school,
yes,
and advocate passionately how, yes, a business could be structured. So share with us, what is the most important thing that these businesses looking to build an online operation should care about?
Well, the secret sauce that the business puts in place is whatever will help them scale.
So the secret sauce, first of all, if you don't have a secret sauce, you don't have a business, right? Somebody else will run you over and then you are out of it. So you have to figure out what that secret sauce is. So as far as growing the business, what is that secret sauce?
It's whatever will help them with the scale, specifically with an eye on systems and processes. And I learned that a long, long time ago. I've been online for 18 years. My husband and I had different businesses prior to coming online. And the beauty about being online, it has such a greater capacity for very rapid scale if you know what you're doing, if you're prepared for it, because businesses can collapse if they aren't prepared for that. And this speaks all the more to be able to scale without crashing and burning, is having those systems and processes in place from day one, being very mindful of that, because that's what creates the security and the stability in your business so that you can truly scale. Because it's not unusual for a business to hit really rapid scale and collapse under that growth. And that has to do with their infrastructure. And if they don't have that solid infrastructure, the proper systems and processes in place, and it ends up being just this mad chaos of trying to rein it in. So scale sounds wonderful. And trust me, it is. I'll tell you about our first ebook in a moment, which is, you know, a little backstory about coming online, et cetera. But you have to have those systems and processes in place, which kind of begs the question, what if I don't know what those should be?
Yeah.
You know, so learn as you go.
Yeah. You know, I had this thing when I started the Amazon operation. I should say just before starting the Amazon operation. So I was already in e-commerce business, but as a provider, we had our software platform, and I became my own customer and decided to sell products to evolve our platform specific to a vertical. So this is going back to 2004. Amazon was still big, but not so big. So I thought, okay, you know, I'll figure out some kind of a challenge on Amazon and learn a specific vertical and then evolve our platform. So, and in the process, we're selling products. I'll be cash flow positive. If somebody asks me, what do you do? I can answer very simple. We sell merchandise. So, because it was very hard explaining our software platform. So I thought, well, that's easy. I can do this in my sleep. The only thing I don't know is the vertical itself, which was health and beauty. So anyway, so I start the operation. The next thing is raising money. So I have people interested, and I had to prepare projections. So I remember preparing these projections. I created a model. The model is based on, okay, how many orders we get per day. So I created this model perfectly. It calculates, it gives the revenue, and then I built in the growth rate. Mm-hmm. And of course, that growth rate was top down. So I want to have this much growth first year, second year, translate that back to the months, and then extrapolate across the 12 months based on which months are more busy than others and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. The numbers came out. I thought, this is so good. And I raised the money, no problem there. And along the way, I'm thinking with fear because the numbers translated to receiving several hundred orders a day.
Okay.
And I had no idea how we would have the kind of infrastructure that would accommodate that kind of growth.
Yeah.
It looked great on the paper. It attracted cash. As yet, the lack of systems and processes in the planning process in the first place. That was later. I mean, thankfully, I'm a person for systems and processes, but I cannot imagine how someone who's not familiar would deal with it. So when you say secret sauce is whatever will help them scale, and having lived through that experience, I know exactly what is the impact of not giving that consideration or giving that consideration. So, for those, because entrepreneurs are usually visionary people that want to sell things. When they hear systems and process, I'm sure some of the listeners are saying, oh, boring. So what I want them to hear from us is some practical ways to approach how to build an infrastructure. So share with us some ideas how someone who cannot really approach this in an educated manner and doesn't like the subject, but as the business owner and the leader, ought to do something about it. So what is the best way to get into this and put something in place?
Yeah, I want to make this really practical as possible because in theory, it all sounds really wonderful about creating processes and systems. So I'm going to start with, and things have evolved because I've been online 18 years. So it used to be, to write your SOP, your standard operating procedure. And basically the key point there is anytime you end up doing something more than once is a signal, I better write this up as an SOP. So let's just say you're a total solopreneur and you've got it all up here. It's all upstairs. But as soon as, and this happened with me, it was in 2000. So I came online in 2004 and it was my son who partnered with me and he was a top affiliate in the world for Best Western, Get Response, et cetera. And, you know, we were talking these through and we did as digital marketers, which digital marketing has infinite scale. versus I'm just going to say that's a really sweet place to be digital, because it's digital. I can deliver 100 eBooks in a day, but it's not so easy to scale an inventory based kind of, you know, product, right? I mean, you've got to have the physical product. So just to make that distinction, but as a solopreneur, which I'm going to guess a lot of your people are not, or I really don't know the entire makeup, but anytime you find yourself repeating a process even more than once, is that's when you have to start thinking as the CEO and create some kind of documentation of it. Now, we do, because we're entirely run online, software, et cetera. We now do it video. We also do it this way, which can take it a step faster to move the ball down the lane in terms of the progression of your company. And so if you are training somebody to take whatever respective process you're doing in your business, is you can explain it to them and then have them create the video and then send it to you. And then you can test and ensure that they really understand that process, because processes are only as good as the governance that you have over these processes. And this is one of the most kind of painful points of being someone who is a manager, supervisor, be that if you're CEO, if you have different department heads, so we have several departments in our company, is that a system is only as good as the governance that you run over it, manage through that. So I'm going to give you a case in point. One of our trainers, Amazon seller, right? Very successful Amazon seller. So he's doing... he's got his cash flow going. He's got a team of five who are running the daily operations for him. It took him time to progress out of daily operations and have it run by a team of people who are utilizing systems, processes, and software. Okay, those are the guts of what helps create a strong team. And they're noticing this drop in cash flow, kind of over a 3-4 month process. Is it the marketplace? You know, and as an owner, you're going, why are my metrics dropping? What's going on? Well, he dug a little bit deeper. And one of his VAs, his virtual assistants, was kind of sliding in her performance. Now, I'm going to address this with a specific process that's going to help mitigate this scenario that just played out. And so he went to, you know, that's what you do as an owner, is you got to get uniquely intrigued. Why? Why is this thing dropping? What's going on? Is it outside noise in the marketplace? Is it competitor? What's going on, right? So he's looking at his Amazon ecosystem and he just thought, well, I'm going to dig into the performance, because the VAs are charged with finding products for him, okay? As he's doing arbitrage, just to be clear. All right. And he finds out she's slipping. Okay. So he has a talk with her and it turns out, yeah, she is losing interest and she left. He said, it was just really a godsend, because then I hired someone and they're far better than she is and was, even when she came in as what we thought was a good producer. So it ended up being this whole, hey, what's slipping here? What's going on? That's what we have to do as business owners. We never have a homeostatic state situation in business. It's never. I mean, here we have Q4 going on at the time of this podcast. It's not homeostatic, especially during Q4. But here's how you mitigate that. And this is during a success call that we were having with our student body. And I took it to another teaching point, was to say, and if you had had her doing her daily KPIs and doing a written end of day report that you as a CEO are, you have to provide that kind of governance in a manual way, unless you have someone hired to do that for you. But no one loves the money in your business than yourself. And protecting your own money. No one loves that money more than you, period. You always have to keep that in mind as you hire people. So anyways, I brought that up as a further teaching point. And if Ed had put in, and I don't know if he has KPIs or not, we teach KPIs all the time, the key performance indicators, he would have seen it. Even, you know, and you have this in a spreadsheet. So one department in our company, they have three KPIs or three reports they have to do at the end of every shift. And I read them all, because those are the vital signs of your business. Just like in the health industry, you go and you check the temperature, blood pressure, respiratory rate, et cetera. your business, you have to keep a pulse on it. Even if you got people who are top managers over a department, I just had something unfold today and it's like, looks like I'm gonna have to go into that department and do a little bit of leadership. So anyways, all to say that it's really about having governance over those systems that you create, but having that daily pulse of your business, your dashboard of performance. It's one thing, you know, where paid advertising is in our wheelhouse as a team. You can look at that, and that's all automated through YouTube and this and that, in our case, Amazon sponsored ads. But what about your team management?
Yeah.
So you have to have really solid governance over your team.
So, and you delivered so much gold here. It's only less than 15 minutes. And I want to really dig into these because I want every business owner to really put emphasis on this and do something, hopefully, right after this episode. Now, the reason why is something you said. Mm-hmm. No one loves your money more than you do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
This is the reason why you must do this.
Yes, you cannot. You can't ever get lazy on that one. Because you think they do, because this is their job and they want to get paid. But no one worries or falls asleep, you know, when you go to bed at night and you're like, this is a problem, right? Because we're here to make profits and create our lifestyle. And so, yeah, you've got to, that governance, I cannot impress it. And you know what? It gets, when you get fat and happy.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get fat and happy. Because things, the marketplace always changes. You can count on that. You always have to be ready to innovate and pivot.
So here is takeaway number one from this episode. All coming under the rule or the principle of no one loves your money more than you do. Takeaway number one. Anytime you start doing something more than once, it's time to write an SOP.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%. So, now, writing is a little more laborious because I used to do those. And you're just like, oh man, I got to put that on my list of to-dos, what a drag. You know, just do a video.
So this is sorry to interrupt, because this is one of my favorite subjects. And I want your take on my approach.
Okay.
So I use a methodology called 5 W's and H.
Okay, not heard of it. Say it one more time.
5 W's and H.
Okay.
In other words, when you are writing an SOP, you ask the 5 questions that start with W. What, who, why, where, when. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And H, how. So let me first elaborate on each one of these. So why are you doing something? What it is that you're doing? And who does it? When it's done? And where you do it? Those are things that everybody, for most of it, it comes with an assumption. Oh, you know, but the most frequently used one is, what do you want me to do? In other words, what? Okay, that's the most frequent. Okay, what do you want me to do? Okay, you know what is asked next? Is okay, how do I do it? So I call the how bells and whistles, shiny objects. Especially in this day and age, people are drawn to these shiny objects because they come in the form of buzzing and beeping and ringing and some kind of tune somewhere,
distractions,
or something. And by the way, clicking around, and one of my pet peeves, pulling up a web page and immediately scrolling down as if, you know, they've read everything at the top. So I always ask, just, you know, forgive me if I asking, but have you read everything that was at the top of the page? No. So why did you just scroll down immediately? It's just this. So these shiny objects and bad habits and everything else, That's what they want. Okay, so you want me to do this? Okay, where do I go? Which program do I use? And where do I click? What do I do next? That's what they are. Mm-hmm. That's not what SOP is about.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask this. So my methodology is very simple. Apply the 5 W's and H exactly in this order. First question, why? What's the purpose of the task? Because people, especially in America, are very smart. And they are a lot more idealistic than the rest of the world, put it that way. I mean, the country was founded on a set of ideals, right?
Mm-hmm,
So if you tell people why they need to do something, they'll figure out the how. But if nobody even brings it up, then they don't care. They just also want to cut to the chase, tell me what to do, show me, and let me do it, and then let me move on. That's the attitude. So the most important piece gets lost, and that's the why. So I ask, when you are writing your SOP, it takes one line. That's all it is. One line. Purpose. Then move on to, by the way, the heading of it is what? So what's the task?
Mm-hmm.
Posting orders to the system, whatever. And then why? And there you can mention why it's important, how it revenue needs to be booked, whatever. And then as the second part of the what, it's just bullets. 1, 2, 3, 4, do this, do that. And what I say is, do not make suggestive comments. In other words, when you go to the military and you are being trained to do something, nobody tells you, you could turn right, you could turn left. Right? They say, turn right, turn left. So I say, write it very simple, straight to the point, with verbs, beginning with verbs, and put bullets. That's it. And then the next thing is, when you do it, is it a daily task? Is it weekly? Blah, blah. And then who does it? Not a person's name, but the position, because positions will scale, people won't. And the last one is where. And where usually, since we're talking online business, is what system are you using? Is it Excel? What is the file name? Is it QuickBooks? Is it A2X? Whatever the case may be. So now you may say, okay, well, what about the age? That's where the video comes in. You don't have to do much. You just record it, and then you put the video. And if you really want to be so helpful, you can grab a few screenshots and stick them into your Word document. There is your SOP. A few bullets, the purpose at the top, and a link to the video, and a few screenshots. And there is no question left unanswered. That's my methodology. So tell me what you think.
I like it because it makes people think strategically. And that's the most important thing you can acquire as a business owner, is to be able to think strategically. So it forces you to check the boxes. The only expansion I would have on that, and this whole thing about the clicking, it makes for a lazy mind. It makes it for an addictive mindset because it's doing all these little endorphin kicks. And we think that's where success at a physiological level is found, with these little endorphin kicks that keep us distracted as little rats in a maze, rather than throwing on the blinders and learning to be strategical as a business owner and thinking more of a parallel thought process, rather than all these distracting. And I struggle with it myself because I'm online. So we have the highest propensity for these shiny objects to come zinging by, and another one just like a shooting star comes zinging by, and I got to go chase that. And when should you be taken off course of the strategies that you set forth with your team? And hey, I just saw this awesome video yesterday, and I really think we should stop. And you actually need a process, a protocol for even when the shiny objects come up. For certain team members, they'll say, we're going to put that in the parking lot over there, because we laid out a strategy and we've got a 3-year living vision. We've got our quarterly VMO, which is focused on our values, missions, operations, et cetera. And so so it sets a course for people, so they're not constantly doing a zigzagging process while trying to scale and build their business. The other part, I just took some notes during that because it was so good, the lazy thinking. The other is, as a copywriter, is what I'm trained in, is people inherently are, I don't like this to sound crass, but selfishly, what's in it for me? So if they can be shown the benefits of what this does, that might be just an added measure, but that would get a little redundant. But, you know, because I have one of my top coaches has 11 virtual assistants. She's got 2 e-commerce businesses, and she's also an educator. She has a PhD in microbiology, and she gamifies the process with her VAs, but also in her leadership to them, she spells out the benefits. And when we do this, we'll be able to, now this is a bigger goal setting for her teams. You know, when we reach this goal, we're going to be able to do X, Y, Z. And it has to be something that is meaningful to them. What is the benefit? You know, we're going to have I know she does a Christmas party for her VAs every year. And so, and for those who, I'm going to guess most everyone is aware, but virtual assistant is what a VA is. And we primarily source from the Philippines. So this way that we run and manage our company, and I love everything you said, because it makes you become a strategical thinker by default. When you teach your team members, when you model it as a leader, then they're going to replicate, right? It starts from the top. So I love it. I'm going to say, hey, can I have this recording as soon as you're done? Hit those 5 W's and the H, because it gets us into training our entire team. It starts from the top. Is this a strategically run company, or is this a cattywampus zigzag phenomenon? Now the boss has another crazy idea.
But, you know? By the way, you know how I learned this? This was... So I started my company, and that the one that I mentioned that I built the whole financial model, raised money. So the next step was move the company to, because we were downtown New York City, and you can't really have a distribution operation downtown New York City. And so we had to go outside and build a distribution center. So, and of course, in the process, I hired a company that will give us the whole order management system and the front end and inventory management, all everything. So it's an implementation. It's an implementation. There's a contract and everything, and they're supposed to deliver. In fact, for anybody listening, if you listen to the first episode, episode 101, it will tell you how I started. And it was a disaster, because they never delivered. So the moral of the story, they never delivered in a timely manner, and the shopping season hit us right in the face, and things just went to hell. It was terrible. But the point is, they are not delivering. They're not delivering. They're not delivering. Or deadlines, they're missing. They're missing. And they're missing.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was a life coach. So she said to me, I'm not going to take any chances. You've got too much going on, and you and I need to have weekly meetings, and I want to know what you're doing. So as I'm going through this, and I told her, I'm in big trouble. The season is here, and these guys will never deliver. How can I make them deliver? And she said, you cannot make anybody do anything. You can only influence them. In addition, it all starts with what was the agreement.
Yes.
Clearly, they are not meeting the agreement. So you need to go back and look at maybe, as far as they are concerned, there's nothing wrong with what they are doing. So we took out the agreement. This is not legal language. This is just simply what they're going to do for me and everything else. And she said, where is the question of when?
Oh, no timeline. Ouch. That's a bit of a problem. You need clearly defined expectations.
Yeah.
And our team members need that as well. Everything to me is defined in the context of time.
Yeah, so I said, well, you know, they, as soon as this happened, I said, and everything, by the way, everything is event-based. In other words, when this happens, they'll do this. When this happens, they'll do this. But there is no actual timeline.
Yeah.
So there are legitimate reasons to have event-based planning rather than timeline-specific. But the events are different. They're not all the same. So you can't do that for everything. So I said, she said, listen, have you ever heard of the rule of 5 W's and H?
Oh.
I said, no, what is that? And she told me exactly. She said, so the moral of the story for the listeners, this is not for writing SOPs. This is not for writing online business. This is for everything. Your contracts you are agreeing to, the relationships that you are starting, personal, professional, employee, employer, contractor, you must have 5 W's and H. What are you going to do for me? I want you to understand why you're doing it and when you're going to deliver it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and what does it look like? Where are you going to deliver it? And who am I dealing with?
Yeah.
You have to make this part of the agreement. And then the H, the house, the shiny objects, you can put them all over the place. You can put all this in one simple page, not even one whole page. So that's how I learned. And guess what? Because I never asked the question of when.
Yeah.
And then we opened the season with no systems, everything manual. And then being the entrepreneur I am, I ran a promotion one weekend with a coupon code, which hit us with 1,000 orders, for which I had 48 pieces in stock.
Oh, no.
And we had to cancel. Now, going back to what you were saying, systems and processes, we had no systems to receive 1,000 orders in one day. We had no process to deal with cancellations, not to mention cancel so many. And then when we ended up not being able to cancel them. So instead, we shipped gift cards worth as much as the order.
Oh, my goodness. Oh
my God. This got us shut down for 6 weeks on Amazon. Because I had no systems and processes going into the shopping season, which meant growth, which clearly hit us.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Hard learned lessons are the best lessons of all, and they're the worst lessons. But
you know,
it makes you, it's embedded in, it's been poured in cement.
You know, the funny thing is the order that we were selling for $5, that order was a mini bottle of cologne. And I kept that on my desk for 8 years.
Oh, hard-learned lesson staring you in the face. I'll never forget that one.
So I want to ask you, because you said something, you know, I catch things, you know, I listen very carefully. So you said something. I want you to explain what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
End of day report.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, all right. So we have this, it's really started with our sales team. And so they have, the report is all, of course, sales is all performance related. So, and we have an incredible operations team. And so we have this note form that we fill out that gets zapped into a Google Doc and we complete and we add in fact, I can just read off what we ask in our EOD, if that's helpful for people. Before I miss that, I just got to add in another SOP that I do. So we've done many live events. So this can apply to, let's say you do your coupon promo. I just want to add this in SOP while I'm thinking of it. So we've done many face-to-face live events, like 50, 60 events. After every event, we sit down and we do a, not a defrag, post-mortem, which doesn't have the friendliest word. But anyways, we go through these three questions. What worked? What didn't work? And what would we do differently? And so, because I'm such a firm believer, you don't just rush from one thing that you you know, launched, you know, if you do a launch of a product or you have a coupon, you know, a Halloween special, whatever it may be, is you set it up to the best you can. But once that event is done, then you do that postmortem. What worked, what didn't work, what would we do differently? It's unbelievable what you learn when you do those, because everything is meant to make you that much more savvy for the next time if you let it teach you, if you take the time to let these events, these business events, teach you. Oh, but remember, Ann, back in 2017, we did XYZ. You know, we'll have that in a discussion with the team. But all right, I didn't mean to digress too much on that. So let me get to the end of day. And then it gets, we copy and paste and we put into a Slack channel. And the real key of this end of day, so I'm looking over at my screen for my EOD sales. There it is. Okay. So we're measuring certain KPIs that are relevant to sales. And this is people-based, by the way. Now, these are the questions. This comes from a top business coach, and I do not remember the gentleman, but the first question is, I control my calendar and my activity today. So we rate that on a scale of 1 to 10. I control my calendar and my activity today. I did what I said I was going to do, and I honored my promises to myself. That's on a scale of 1 to 10. Next is, I spent my time doing my morning formulas and nailed my morning routines. All right, we're really big on that morning routine because that sets the pace for your whole day. And we do this as a team. I operated at the peak of my abilities and I'm satisfied with my performance. I protected my biology today. And lastly, I remember to serve people today. So those are the questions. And then we post in overall thoughts, kind of like our end of day. Here's what I'm thinking of how things went down today, right? And then we have all our call notes that basically the power of this, of how it literally changes a team, is it's all hanging out in front of everybody. So this is a team of about 10. And there it is in the Slack channel. And you can see, and so in other words, no one can be hiding with their numbers. You know?
So these are questions that all they have to do is just rate them on a scale of 1 to 10.
For those questions, yes.
For those questions. And this is per team member.
Mm-hmm.
You post the results of every team member publicly so everybody sees.
Yes, they do it. They have to. So it shows up on a Google Doc. That data is zapped in all our call notes. It goes into both our, we use ActiveCampaign, and then it gets zapped also into this Google Doc. And then you add in, you answer those questions that are already in the form. Each day it's there. That's all automated within our system. And then each individual copies and pastes it into the Slack channel. And the Slack channel, you can read through everybody's notes. And so it's like it forces the team to be, there's no hiding. There's no hiding anymore. Because this drove me nuts with the sales team. I'm like, I don't know how many consultations are in the books tomorrow. I don't know this. And I love data. Give me my data. I want my data. And we've got multiple dashboards in the company and whatnot. But see, our company, the finesse and the success of our company is the people who run the systems for us. So when your team, so now our operations team has instituted their end of day, marketing department is next. And it's basically, I only want A players on my team. And B's and C's will automatically, you know, they're like, they show plainly who's a non-performer.
Okay, so tell me this then. So let's say that I'm one of those team members and I scored myself 10 on all of those. But I never really performed 10. So who is doing the validation of those scores?
I haven't seen that happen yet. And it's also how we introduced it. Like if someone is saying every day they protected their biology, no one does. I mean, you know, I've never perfected my morning routine to the level I would like it to be. But you know, you can just, if everyone, I write 10 for, did I serve people today? That one is a 10 every single day, because the better I can be as CEO and serve my team, who I want to be big producers for me, the better my business is going to go. And it is literally what I do.
So it's the honor system.
Is honor system for that. But their actual performance, those you can't lie about, because it comes down to quantitative analysis and qualitative. Right. And yeah. So if you're going strictly by quantitative, you don't realize, oh man, her dad caught COVID and then her kid this. I mean, life happens. These are human beings. It's
very valuable. So let me ask you another question. So do you tabulate these? Like, for example, collectively as a team, what is the collective score of the team for every one of those questions?
Okay, I haven't done that yet. We've done that with many, like we are now using Colby as a test for when we do hires. You make your money when you hire, and we keep refining our hiring process because we do a lot of hiring. So now we're using the system within Colby, but we've done other things where it's the strength of our team. I can't remember the names of the tests. Other department heads take care of that. But I will say the top quality of my entire team is we are strategists. That is the top quality from, you know, how we are predisposed. But we've had a number of these different kind of analysis. This we've been running for about 2 months yet. So I haven't actually, and that's not in a CSV, unfortunately. If it were, this is just copy and paste and put into it, take someone to then put it into a CSV, and then it could be charted.
Because being the systems person, I tell you what I would do. I would, first of all, get the collective score for the organization for those questions. See the trend, how it's trending, tie those trends to some events. Then you can see what events are driving some of those numbers up and down. And then, most importantly, you set triggers where if this number drops below this, up to or down to this, it's okay. We don't have to do anything. It's working. Mm-hmm. This and this needs attention. Between this and this needs correction.
Yes.
So, and then you can create a correction program. You can create an attention program.
Yes.
For each one of those. And also events to get everybody, because, you know, somebody who's neglecting the biology, scoring low, then nutrition, physical activity, things like that. So I'm just, you know, throwing ideas. As I love this. So this is called end of day report.
Yeah. And we actually, so something we're very keen on is what is working for our company. We teach our Amazon sellers. So I've had an end of day tracker within my online company since 2007. So naturally, I'm going to teach my own students. And I'm from the sports world. I was a sports coach for 12 years. And so I was a gymnastics coach, and I would test my gymnasts on their strength and flexibility once a month. And they were put through this battery of, you know, tests. And, you know, and so I like to say that business is the sport of non-athletes. I mean, business requires huge athleticism right up here. Massive mental athleticism.
You know,
and
you
so,
throw out these quotes, like, you know, I'm writing them down. You know, you know, those who are listening, you're not seeing, and when Anne is talking, you're not seeing me either. But I'm writing them down. So the business is the sport of
non-athletes. Yeah. And it's far more rigorous than any sport. So I have huge admiration for the sports world, because I had no business being, you know, trying to be a gymnast, but I understood one thing, and my dad's a physicist, so I think I gained this logical mindset through my dad. But nonetheless, I thought, well, I don't have any business thinking I can do that trick on the balance beam when I can't even do, let's say a cartwheel on the floor. Oh, well, now I'm 2 weeks. So I reverse engineered in my little brain when I was in junior high, I want that, but I'm going to have to reverse engineer it down to the most basic fundamentals. I couldn't even do a push-up. So I had my sister put encyclopedias on the end of my arms until my arms were shaking, and I gained enough strength to do a push-up. And I just bit by bit kept incrementally building what was the rudimentary building blocks of flexibility and strength to even think I could do those tricks. It's stupid to think I can do those without those fundamentals. that's what happens in business. So I did grab a couple of books before this call. This book is a classic from, it's got to be at least 20 years ago. My pages are yellow. I mean, and he basically, and this is what we teach our Amazon sellers. And are you familiar with this one, Nick?
Yes, so let's say the name for those listening.
Michael Gerber.
Yeah.
And it's the proverbial, but I love making pies. I think I'm going to start a business. The starry-eyed entrepreneur. God bless them, right? We all started. You're selling your cologne.
So, Ed, I want to mention the name of that. That book is the Bible of small business called E-Myth Revisited, Why Small Businesses Fail in America. By Michael Gerber. That's what you're referring to, right?
Absolutely. And it is so, so true because and my husband had a windshield business. We were in the automotive, we've been in real estate, we've done a lot of different things. And this book was just like set the groundwork. That's fine, Susie. You love creating peach pies. Yay for Susie, right? What Susie doesn't realize is, well, there's going to be marketing and advertising. You're going to need mass production. You're going to need bookkeeping and accounting. Before you know it, you're wearing all these hats and you're like, that's not what I bargained for though. And oh my gosh, how do I start? And we typically start how it always works, in the basement, in the garage. Jeff Bezos started that way. Bill Gates started that way. That's the American way, right? We get an idea and we innovate. But this lays it out and says, yeah, but. And so with our sellers, so we have trained for 10 years and over 9,000 people. And we did this hard data look at our students 3 years ago. And we saw two main points of failure. Because for me, I don't like failure. It comes from my sports upbringing. I don't like failure. I like success. And I'll climb big mountains to hit success because the thrill of it is pretty fun. So I thought, okay, so how can we make this better? How can we improve upon the results for our members? Number one, we realize they get into their head, over their head so quickly. And what they weren't really accustomed to was to learn how to outsource. So we thought, that's what we have to change in our messaging. They need to know from day one, no, we're going to show you how to automate your business. We're going to give you the blueprint. We're going to give you the systems and processes. And we're going to teach you and mentor you how to hire people. Because if you don't, here's what's going to happen. You're saying you want to replace your full-time income. You've only got 24 hours in a day, and you do have to sleep and eat and take care of your family, right? How's that going to happen? We're going to get you on the path, doing it the right way from day one. And we've got everything there for you. So that's a big deal because we've had $1 or $2 million sellers come and they're pulling their hair out because they got a mess going on.
Sure.
Like you kind of mentioned what happened at the beginning. And so this is just saying, yeah, but there's some other things you need to be aware of. So
you know, this is, I mean, it's interesting. You and I had a conversation before this recording, but we never rehearsed anything. I frankly had no idea you were going to pull that book out, but that book is the book that changed my life in terms of how I approach things. And I started reading it at the time that this thing happened to me.
Okay. And,
but right after.
Because
I had no time to forget about read, but sleep at the time. So after getting through the whole shopping season, I made my peace with the fact that I would never have anything during the season. So this is now pushed back. So when the dust settled, I thought I better step back and take a look at how I'm building this business. And this book was recommended to me and I read it and I implemented it to the dot, except 2 years later, 3 years later, to realize the book leaves a piece out.
Which piece did you find?
And that piece made the whole approach complete with the book called Good to Great by Jim Collins.
Yes.
You know what this book leaves out? People component.
Yes, gotta have good people.
Yeah. And how to build that culture, how to foster growth, yeah, and things like that. The book leaves that out. Now, I did meet Michael Gerber.
You did meet him or didn't?
I did meet Michael Gerber.
Oh, wow.
And I told him this.
Ah.
Michael Gerber is a great guy. So knowledgeable. Terrible speaker because he's a very negative person.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's how he came across when he gave his speech. We were a group.
Uh-huh.
And but anyway, after reading Good to Great, I changed the approach. At least I shouldn't say I changed. I added an approach.
Yes.
To building, and that was that's also a great book. I recommend everyone, every leader should read. In fact, Jim Collins wrote another one as a follow-up called Great by Choice.
Oh.
And that book is about companies who not only survive but thrive during recessions, during crisis.
Yes.
So how do they do that? He compares same thing that he has in Good to Great as comparison companies. Mm-hmm. He has it for those where companies that thrive versus companies that just make it through. And what is the difference and what makes them successful? So
that is the glue that binds it all together, you know, and this is one of the failure points that we see within our members is how they treat their team of VAs. And Coach Candida, one of our coaches, she's double HR certified. And she said, there's a problem. They're not treating their VAs very well. And I think that is a massive skill set to develop of how do you run, manage, lead a team to greatness. And that is the culture. And in fact, I study Gallup a lot and all their stuff that they come out with is that, statistically, and it's by a large margin, especially in the younger population, Gen Z and Gen X, if I have these all right. Anyways, they are looking more to align themselves with a company that serves a purpose, that has an end goal, that gives them more purpose in their own personal life. They favor that more over the salary. And you go, it's true. And that is, we have to stay progressive because I'm a baby boomer.
That's another qualifier when you are picking people, right? If somebody cares more about money than the purpose and the vision of the company, that's a qualifier or disqualifier, I should say.
And the owner, the leader, should have a very clear vision of who you are and where you're leading people to. I was doing some interviews a couple of weeks ago and the gal said, well, I'd like to know, what is the vision for the company? I'm like, I love it. Someone's actually asking that. In other words, they're going to hitch their wagon to you. Why? Yeah. Where, oh leader, are you taking us?
Excuse me, the first W. So you and I can talk for hours. I haven't even asked you my most favorite questions. We don't have time for that. We'll have to do another one. So tell us where you're based and tell us how people can reach you. But before that, give us a little bit about, because it's very unusual to see a woman business owner who really has so much focus on this kind of stuff. So where is that coming from?
Well, you can't quite see it on my shelf, but I have some hand-knitted Christmas bells I made when I was like 7 or 8. My mom said, Ann, you should really go out in the neighborhood and sell those. So I had my first store. It was a cardboard box. It was the fanciest box you ever saw. I'm just kidding. It was a cardboard box. I mean, I don't know if that's what it is. I would say most of it was really my sports years. Sports gave me an identity because I was teased a lot. I was very skinny and scrawny. So it's not just overweight people get teased. I got teased in the other direction. And Tony Robbins talks about the inner giant. and your inner giant. My inner giant was like, oh yeah? Well, I'll show you. I didn't say that. I was a little pipsqueak, but I just developed this steely resolve that it's just kind of, I don't even know how to describe it. That when I made up my mind, and I believe there's a biochemistry aspect to that, it's just consider it done. And so I think it's how I have faced hurdles in my life. You know, and I look at it as there's two categories of people. There's people that make life happen and there's people who let life happen to them. Well, I don't want to sit in the poor Eeyore club. You have your little rain cloud and have a party with your rain cloud. The poor Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh is what I'm referring to. As far as being a woman, I don't know. I guess it was, I still work out. I love lifting weights. I'm not any superwoman, but.
Where did that? When did you realize that you had that attitude that, you know, you don't want to let life happen?
Yeah. I think it's the duality of doing business and having done sports and really getting into business. I was doing a lot of side things, direct sales. I did while raising our boys. I did a lot of direct sales. And then I went all out in 2002 with my eldest son. I homeschooled my three sons and I taught them business. And I guess it was always, it comes from my dad. My dad really forged this in me. So if it is to be, it's up to me. And he had a very distinct philosophy that was adverse to a dependency.
So was kind of. He like that himself?
No, he has a business, but he's never made even one dime off of it. God bless him and he wants me to help run it. He's an inventor.
I'm here hearing something. So your dad taught you to go after what you want rather than just let things happen to you?
Well, he did it. I don't want to get, call it political. I don't want to get in that arena, but it was like, either people become dependent on the government to do things for them, or it's like, no, I'm going to do it for myself, because if I have them do it for me, I'm going to lose some of my freedom. And I treasure my freedom too much to have them be my nanny state for me. So I would rather be an entrepreneur and be able to have the wherewithal to create my own economy. I'm not looking for that to be my answer than a nanny state is. No, that's incumbent upon us. And the stronger.
You stand on your own feet, bottom line. You're responsible.
Absolutely.
And dad taught you that. Is that.
Yes. Well, because of that worldview, which I guess it really, I'll tell you what motivated me when I realized, I thought, you know, there might not be any Social Security, anything by the time I get to that age. And I remember talking to some parents on the soccer sideline. And he said, oh, yeah, I'll be working till the day I die. He said that statement. I thought, really? Well, I'm going to chart a different course, you know, and I'm not going to go the traditional path. I'm going to put things, I would rather be in control with all its failures and all its potential, which is not fun. You know, it's not fun to have those, but I got to tell you, the strength of our resilience is how we own and control our future. And the more we lean into a dependency, that we become atrophied. And that's to our great detriment as a country. When we atrophy the willpower and the staying power of people, it's nigh on to criminal, because
that it extinguishes the human spirit.
Exactly. So I tell people my mission as a citizen, my contribution is to strengthen the family economy. So goes the family, so goes the country. And I have impacted thousands and thousands of people's lives for them to have more control of what comes out of their house. They can work from home doing this. And it's very empowering.
So, Anne, I have something that I heard you, you know, go through and tell me your story and your dad. And tell me if this is kind of coming close a little bit. Mm. It may be totally nothing to do with it. So your dad taught you to stand on your own feet. I heard you also mention he was an inventor, but he never really had a business.
Well, he has one.
But yeah, you know, it's okay. So do you think that you put in even extra effort to accomplish what your dad gave you the fundamental principle for, but really never reaped the benefits of it himself by building a business, but you are now doing it?
Very much so. In fact, there were both teachers. My dad is a physicist, taught physics at St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, but I had them come to one of my events, and I wanted to give credit to my parents for instilling in me the attributes that has led me to where I'm at. And they were honored in front of my members who are at this event. My salute to them, together, the both of them, of how they helped forge who I am. Because, you know, a place of gratitude for how they helped shape me. I grew up in a learning environment. We had books galore, and my brother and I would play school and all this kind of thing. I said, Mom and Dad, I now have my own school, and I've had 9,000 students in my school.
You're still playing school.
I'm still playing school. But there is also a saying, a prophet is not welcome in their own land. And the rest of my family, they Dan does her thing. And you know what? I tell my husband, I say, I don't need their approval or understanding, because quite frankly, how could they even understand my world? Not fair. It's not reasonable. I live in a completely different reality and world. I live in the online land. That is the land I've been called to for 18 years. And how could they understand it? It's beyond comprehension. This is like when COVID came along, my team, we're like in Noah's Ark. We're fine. It just got better. While there was all this raging storm, I didn't have to lay down crazy policies on them, insane mandates and this on them, because we're working from home. How blessed are we to, you know, so I'm just like, is this even real? Pinch myself. Yeah. It is real.
Well, I mean, the world has changed so much in the past 20, 30 years. It's unbelievable. So but it all goes back to the basics. And this was very inspiring for me, I'm sure for everybody listening. And the amount of nuggets that you delivered, it's unbelievable. I hope that anybody listening right after this episode start implementing right away.
Yes.
And, and then if you are ever stuck, reach out to Anne, who's going to give us her contact information now. So tell us, how can people reach you?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not as socially, you know, pounding out stuff under my own brand as I used to back with my former online company. But I don't answer a whole lot on LinkedIn, I'll be honest. I suppose, if you Google my name, it's going to be a redirect to my school. So, okay. I mean, and then they can just send an email to our customer
care.
Give
us the web address for your
school. It's ecommercebusinessschool.com. ecommercebusinessschool.com. Yeah. But they'd have to let them know, hey, I watched the podcast with Nick, you know, and that's, I mean, you couldn't message me through Facebook. I don't know that I want to give my personal email address here.
No, it's okay. I mean, they can, I'm sure they can reach you, and they'll mention the Amazon Legends podcast.
Yes.
So you just tell your team, anybody mentions Amazon Legends, that's the direct ticket to Anne.
Yes, I truly love what I do, and I love empowering people. And, you know, business, it's just, there's always a new vista and a new challenge to learn and overcome. I just had one this morning. I'm like, And what we do in business is we need to get uniquely fascinated. That's interesting. That was my dad growing up, because he's a physicist, figures out problems. How can I make that better? That's what we need to do.
Great. Thank you, Anne. This was an excellent one. And thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
And this brings us to the end of another episode. And I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.